Mini episode 594 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by TV Howl, your home on the web for coverage of today's television scene and a look at the history of the medium as covered by big-time TV critic Adam Buckman. Follow them on the web at tvhowl.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
All right, so before we move on to New Orleans here, I know there was one more thing here. I could tell from your facial expression, Kyle, there was one more thing that you had noticed about Minnesota. You do a show with somebody enough years and you pick up on
this. Only team in the league to be 2-0 in overtime games last
year.
That's good fortune. I believe they were the only team to win two overtime games. So in addition, building off close games, two overtime wins?
Yeah.
Ooh, that's pretty lucky.
Okay.
No team goes into a league, no team goes into a year and says, you know what we're going to do? We're going to win two games in overtime this year.
Yeah. Well, that's true. You can't necessarily count on that. Next up, alphabetically in the NFC, the New Orleans Saints, 7-9 a year ago. I got them going 8-8 this year.
Major disappointment last year.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But the funny thing is, I mean, we started to see signs of that last year, and I think that will only be the case going forward. When you combine Mickey Loomis's incompetence at managing the cap, Drew Brees with the pay me every last dime maximalist approach that he had a few years ago to it.
You've been very critical of that. I'll admire your consistency.
Yeah.
You've ripped Drew Brees on this program for years.
Not a team first guy, if that's the thing, because again, in today's day and age, there is a cap, and at a certain point in time, it's a zero-sum game.
Yeah.
You're either about the last dollar or you're about being a champion. And he showed what his priority was at that point in time. Because of these factors, you and I talked about this briefly off air, I see them being a lot like Carolina. I have them a game higher at 8-8 this year than where I have Carolina slotted. But they're a team that, again, they're going to be counting on a disproportionate amount from the quarterback, because when you look at the rest of the team, there's a lot of holes, and
yes.
You know, going in,
they had to get rid of a lot of guys. They were in cap hell.
Yeah, and going in a new direction defensively
that
is only going to take.
Bird signing doesn't look very good.
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. And going in a new direction defensively only takes you so far, because they have a lot of holes here. Most concerningly, you know, you would not in years past ever think to compare New Orleans and Carolina, because the most obvious distinction between them in terms of the offensive identity, it was always, well, Drew Brees has an awful lot of weapons to work with, and poor Cam Newton, they have a quota of only one guy who's any good for him to throw to. Now for Drew Brees, you don't even know who that guy is. It's like, well, hopefully Brandon Cook steps up this year, because Marcus Colston, a lot of city miles on him, as we've seen. Graham goes to Seattle. Max Unger is going to help on that offensive line, and
they were normally weak at center, so that was an interesting trade. It could be one of those trades where it kind of helps both teams, but
I think it's going to hurt them more though, because you know what I mean. Drew Brees, and I'm not doubting the man's greatness or his credentials as a Hall of Famer, but Drew Brees never made something out of nothing, and now in the twilight of his career, more than ever, he's being asked to make almost nothing into something.
I made the argument, at least I think I have, with you before. If not, it was with someone else randomly. Might be my buddy Nick Flash.
Was it behind a mic or to some random schmo?
Yes. Might be my buddy Nick Flasher, because he always was mocking San Diego for letting Brees go and whatnot.
I made a point of going up to him at your wedding. I said, I just want to meet and shake the hand of the guy who gets name-checked a lot on our podcast.
Oh, okay, that's good. Yeah.
Your best man.
Yes. I've said it before that Drew Brees' entire, I assume he's going to go to the Hall of Fame, that his entire candidacy is owed to the fact that he went to the right situation with the right coach.
Sure.
That was it. If he had gone to Miami with Nick Saban, I don't think we're talking about Drew Brees' Hall of Famer. I just think it was like the most perfect quarterback coach synergy in recent league history. And make no mistake about it, this is the best.
Yeah.
The Peyton Brees era has been the best era of Saints football ever.
Sure.
But what a difference a year makes, huh? Last year at this time, a lot of people had this as a Super Bowl contender. And wow, did this team crash and burn.
I didn't believe in them defensively nearly enough to think
we both thought they would regress, but I think we had them in the Big Four. It was funny, last year at this time,
right,
we were talking about a Big Four in the NFC. Seattle, Green
right
Bay, who remained the Big Two, but then New Orleans and San Francisco, who, oh my, have they fallen off. The Saints should improve their win total this year. They dropped from, what was it, 12 or 11 to 7 wins?
Right.
Last year, I know they won 11 or 12 games in 2013, whatever. What was the most head-scratching of all, and I know you and I talked about this off-air, was all of a sudden they just started losing home games. They lost, like, remember the season last year, they were kind of struggling. They got off to the 0-2 start, but they had battled back and were 4-4, and they had a string of 3 home games.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember doing the show with you last year. I'm like, well, that division was up for grabs. Look for the Saints to take control. 3 home games. They inexplicably lost all 3 after not losing a home game under Sean Payton for years. I mean, he had like this 20-something game win streak at home.
Yeah.
Now, to do that, you have to do a little funky math. You have to erase the season he was suspended.
Right.
But they lost to the Niners in overtime. They lost to Cincinnati. They badly. They lost a Monday nighter to Baltimore. You can't think they're going to go 3-5 at home again.
Right.
This year. As a matter of fact, Richard A. Morris, they lost their last 5 home games last year.
Yeah.
They entered 2015 on a 5-game home losing streak.
They killed me down the stretch, picking their games, because like the Bears, I kept picking for it to go the other way. This can't possibly happen again. Yeah,
look,
not so much.
Here's the thing. They can pick up like, they could go like, you would expect them to have a winning record at home this year.
I guess. I mean, I see them as an 8-8 team.
Yeah,
so I guess.
Well, here's the thing, Moore. I'm going to agree with you momentarily. But they're not going to return to that, like, it's an automatic home win. Like,
no.
Oh, Saints are at the Superdome. The Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
It's a win. Oh, New Orleans Saints have won. They proved that last year. And there's a lot of holes on this roster. Now, the argument that they'll be better, they were also second worst in turnover differential last year.
Yeah.
This is an 8, maybe 9 win team. I see them challenging for a wild card, but ultimately, I settle on 8 as well. I just don't like them organizationally. When it came to like a team to get behind to make the playoffs, I just don't. I'm with you. There's too many holes on both sides of the ball, and Drew Brees is getting up there to the point where he's not Andrew Luck anymore. He can't make up for as many holes as Andrew Luck can. So 8 wins for the Saints. They're at 8.5. That's a great number.
Mickey Loomis is like the dumb kid on the playground that doesn't understand how the tetherball works. You know, I mean, what they've done.
Do people
not
know how a tetherball works?
Oh, you know, ooh, how does this, it spins around the thing here. Yeah, that's how I see Mickey Loomis when I look at their cap situation. And I'll tell you what, too, this is maybe a little controversial, but I'm going to say it anyways.
Oh, boy.
Well, you may agree with this, but look, if I was taking over the Saints right now, you know what I'd do? I'd blow it up. Because the sun has set on the era of the Saints as a top team. Yeah. They're not getting back there. Kyle, if they're not going to be a Super Bowl contender again with Drew Brees, why bother? This whole thing, maybe they can make the playoffs this year. Sure, and get their ass handed to them in round one, round two at the most optimistic.
I
would blow it up.
I can see how they'd want to try one more year of this. I agree with you at the end of this year. I think if...
Blow it up.
I agree with you. I think at the end of this year, it'll be interesting. If they get rid of Brees, Peyton's going to leave too, right?
Yeah, they did draft Garrett Grayson as his potential replacement. Well, you know.
How many Colorado State games did you watch last year?
Probably less than you. What do you think of him?
He's okay.
Okay.
He's not going to be a great pro.
Okay.
If Garrett Grayson is their starter next year, oh, good grief, the New Orleans Saints are going to be bad.
I mean,
it's funny.
I don't want to go to the know-nothingism, but Drew Brees wasn't a first-round quarterback either.
And you know what? The success rate of second-round QBs is not great. It's not great.
True.
It's usually a lot of first-round guys.
And I think
then
Grayson was a 3, and that's even lower.
Yeah. So it's funny, and I think we're just saying the same thing, just different ways. As far as, like, a couple-year outlook down the road of the teams in the NFC South, I think the Saints is the bleakest right now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because Carolina, you talk about the cap hell, they've had a couple years to kind of alleviate that. I mean, they may take a step back this year because of it.
Yeah.
But New Orleans' big step back hasn't happened yet, which worries you a little bit. That'll be next year, though. This year, they'll be an 8 or 9 win team, but I do not have them in the playoffs.
Yeah. I would be blowing it up now, which that's a risky thing to do. It's always risky to blow it up too early.
Before it blows up, because the thing is with the fan, like, most people won't like that, because, like I said, it's been the best era of Saints football. Without question. I mean, they brought them a Super Bowl.
They're not joining a Big Three or Big Four again, as they're constituted. If you don't have a hope for that, then the next best thing is to have a hope for that in 5 years.
Look, I think the argument can be made. I think it's just going to happen after this year. It would be very risky to do right now.
It would be
actually catastrophic. It would be actually catastrophic to do right now, because the season's going to start in 2 weeks.
Well, that's true. Yeah, too late to...
Buffalo and Houston would gladly take Drew Brees,
too late to blow it up. A team that has gone through a couple of different questions in recent years. How's that for a segue? The Morris School segues. On whether or not to blow up a situation is a team that you think is going to go very well this year.
Yes.
Do very well. Our next team.
Or they're blowing it up. And if it doesn't, they're blowing it up too.
The New York Giants. Well, they're kind of locked in with Eli on that contract, are they not? They're going to have
a they're a big change. You know, it was funny. We debated about Sean Payton, whether or not he would leave. Mm-hmm. This is a make-or-break year for Tom Coughlin.
It may very well be.
If they don't make the playoffs, he will not be back.
The Giants...
It will be a retirement.
6-10 a year ago. I got them at 8-8 this year. Although, again, on the theory of their due, this is one of the strangest things. And part of this statistic has to do with, and again, we have a little bit later of a cycle this time around in presidential politics. But in 2008 and 2012, nobody was more deadly after the Iowa caucuses than Eli Manning. Because when the Iowa caucuses came and went, that was his cue to get it going out of nowhere. Both seasons, electric Januarys into February. Again, with the caucuses being right around the time of the Super Bowl this year, Eli's going to have to get it in gear before we get to that point, which probably won't happen, although you think it could happen potentially. They just, to me, they're too scary defensively, and it's so easy to just fall back on the whole thing of, oh, JPP in his hand. No, if you watch them the last couple of years, it goes beyond that. That front seven has had a number of different holes. The secondary as well. I mean, Rodgers, Cromartie is kind of up and down. You know, the Prince on the other side, you never know what you're going to get out of him. John Beeson, the sell-by date on him was, what, 2012? So
defense does not look good on paper. I will concede you that. But you know whose defense didn't look good on paper going into last season?
Who?
The NFC East champion Dallas Cowboys.
Are you buying, and this kills me to say as a Vol fan, but are you buying Robert Ayers' reclamation project?
No, I'm not. I'm saying that, look, I'm going to give you some numbers here. They were first of all, they were only minus 20 in point differential last year despite being 6-10.
Mm-hmm.
So they were better than their record. They were also 0-4, not surprisingly. This will go hand in hand when you're a 6-10 team and you're only outscored by 20 points. They were 0-4 in close games. They lost 3 in a row. This really sunk their season, although you could argue their season was already kind of on the crapper. They lost to San Francisco, Dallas, and Jacksonville 3 weeks in a row by a combined 10 points. The defense is not going to be good this year, but I don't think it has to be. I think it can be mediocre. And that's okay, because you know why? I think this offense is going to be deadly. The line is a question mark, but the passing game, I think when I look at the NFC East, I don't see a dominant defense. I think you can throw on all of these defenses.
Including Seattle. I mean,
NFC East?
No. I thought you meant their overall schedule. Okay,
No, NFC East.
All right. No. You're right.
I think the NFC East, your father's NFC East. It will be a division of shootouts.
Well,
I think the Giants are, I mean, I'm telling you, man, maybe it's, I'm putting a lot of faith in just a 12-game sample.
Okay.
But Odell Beckham ain't like Josh Gordon. He didn't get suspended again for drug use. You put Victor Cruz with him, Eli Manning, second year in Ben McAdoo's offense. I think he puts up monster numbers this year, and the Giants, the the Giants steal this division at 10-6.
Victor Cruz being in there with Beckham could be just absolutely electric when you consider
that. They're going to have to win a lot of games like 28-24.
Here's the funny thing is that I'm going to refer to this as the nexus of the girl with the dragon tattoo.
I never finished that movie.
A pretty good one. Rooney Mara, of course, named for the two bridges of her family, the Giants and the Steelers. The case you're making for the Giants is close to the same case I made for the Steelers winning the division, offense carrying the team. It's very interesting. You and I were different
teams. Yeah, I just think that, well, here's the case. We've only talked about Dallas so far in this division. You and I both think they're going to regress.
Yes.
And I don't think they'll win the division. So if it's not the Giants, it'll be the next team we're talking about. And I just feel like that team isn't as good as they were last year. When I look at the – and it's – look, we were both dumb with the Redskins last year. They'll obviously bring up the rear. But – so if you think Dallas isn't going to win the division, it's either the Giants or the Eagles. This is the big segue, right?
Mm-hmm.
I just think looking at the Giants and the Eagles, the Giants are much more likely to be better than they were last year than the Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
Are likely to be better than they were last year. Now that the Eagles won three more games last year, and it's going to be close, but ultimately, I'm going with the Giants. I love them over 8.5 wins. This is one of my. The Giants are one of my teams that I'm calling for a best case scenario. Every year you got to call for a best case scenario and a worst case scenario in some instances. I'm calling a best case scenario 10-6. I'm actually calling for them to steal the second seed in the NFC.
Wow. Well. Again, this is what you said about the NFC, the mystery of it.
And if they don't, it'll be Atlanta.
Right. Well,
if either the Packers will not get the second seed.
Like most of the, and this is the fluidity of the NFC that we keep coming back to. Like any of the times that I disagree with you, I can at least see the scenario. You're painting a scenario that could happen. The thing of it is that this best case scenario, I regard it as maybe a 20% chance of happening. You probably regard it as somewhere about 60 to 70% chance, and that's where we differ.
I mean, can't you? I mean,
I see the possibilities.
I just see the offense. The defense is really bad. But remember last year, everyone said, oh, my God, this Dallas Cowboys defense is so bad. There's no way this team can win games with this defense, even with their offense. I think it's the way that the Cowboys were talked about at this time last year I'm hearing a lot of that same chatter with the Giants this year. Their defense was really bad last year, and it looks really bad on paper this year, but defense more volatile. And this team to me is, well, Dallas has a pretty good offense too. But I just think the Giants are more apt to win shootouts of any team in the division. I think that's what it's going to take. There's going to be a new division winner here, and it just comes down to the fact that I like the Giants more than the Eagles
this
year.
Well, and I'm going to revert back to the old incumbent here. That brings us to the next team we're looking at. They were 10-6 last year and missed the playoffs.
Second straight year.
I forecast a slight fall off here, 9-7.
Me
but
too.
Winning the division and a tiebreaker. Your Philadelphia Eagles. This is a team that I want to put in a plug. An excellent, excellent show. Weekends on 97.5 The Fanatic in Philadelphia. Good friend of the show, FDH Lounge dignitary Joe Stazak. He had me on 97.5 a couple weeks ago over the summer to talk about this, the great honor of having me on his show. And we were talking about the Eagles, and we both agreed that this is a case where, and this is where you have to question the entire foundation of this. And yet this is a team I'm picking to win the division, but by default. Because so many moves that were made seem like change for the sake of change. I mean, whatever you think of, and again.
Is this team on paper better than it was last year?
No. I mean, I have them at,
that's,
you know,
scary.
Losing. Yeah, but again, that's how down I am on the rest of the division. And again, I've never been as down on Sam Bradford as you. You know, your whole captain check down thing or whatever.
Chief
check down, okay. But fortunately, on 97.5 in Philadelphia, when I name checked you, I referred to him as Captain Checkdown.
Yes.
So that was, I saved you some hate mail for being a racist.
Yes.
But it was like, whatever you think of Nick Foles, I mean, Nick Foles for Sam Bradford, to me, it's like, why bother?
Well,
and
but
you know,
you
the other moves as well.
It's funny because we haven't talked about the Rams yet.
Yeah.
I think when you factor in coaching, it is kind of a wash because Chip Kelly's going to get more of a quarterback than
six
you know,
of one,
Jeff
half
Fisher
dozen
will.
Of another. Yeah. But I mean, you know, and what they're doing here, I mean, you know, maybe this is the year that, you know, Matthews steps up at wide receiver. But yeah, I think he was a disappointment last year.
And I think the offensive line was such a strength last year, and
yeah.
it's gotten weaker. And DeMarco Murray, it's funny, if Dallas had kept DeMarco Murray, let's go back to that.
Yeah.
We'd be like, oh God, he's gonna have a regression year.
Yeah,
I think that was. It's fun. Now they also did, like you said, you signed Matthews.
The only thing that saved him is their stupid cap moves because Ryan Matthews. I liked
trading LeSean McCoy for Kiko Alonso. I agreed with that trade, but after that, man, I started scratching my head.
Well, and the thing of it is too, they clearly, you know, Matthews was supposed to be the replacement for McCoy. And then they decided they wanted to go get Murray and relegate Matthews to number two. So when I said before Cincinnati has the best 1-2 punch in the league at running back, it may be Philadelphia because Murray and Matthews actually have superior long-lasting track records. But that's the thing here, too. They're lucky to have Matthews because, again, Murray, you know, what's the year after going to look like? It's generally pretty fugly in the NFL when you're north of, what's the magic number, like
375?
370. Oh, yeah, rule 375. Defensively, they've made some upgrades here, too, but we joked about this at the time, getting Maxwell to play cornerback. You know, it's like going and signing, you know, like that old Seinfeld joke, the third tenor. You know, Byron Maxwell was part of one of the greatest secondaries of all time. Yeah, because of the other three guys, not because of him. You could have put Kyle Ross or Rick Morris as the fourth guy in the Legion of Boom, Kyle Ross.
That's stupid taking it.
We're going
to
beat that joke
into the ground. So you absolutely just dogged a team you picked to win the NFC East. Get on board with the G-Men, man.
I can't.
The G-Men are going to be better and the Eagles are going to be worse.
I can't because with Alonzo in there, again, I think he's going to be a little bit of a force multiplier defensively here. I think that, again, you know, with some of the other talent that they have up front, like Cox, I think this is going to be – it's going to be a better defense than the Giants. You got to agree with that. Now the Giants have a better offense. You won't concede the Eagles have a better defense than the Giants.
Right. So the Eagles' defense is not great. Their secondary stinks. The Eagles' secondary stinks. It has stunk for many times.
For many years. I don't know that you know. You may not be perhaps giving enough credit to Buckeye Malcolm Jennings there at strong safety. You may perhaps be overlooking him. I understand that, but. Listen, the Giants have it way over the Eagles offensively. On paper,
well, but the only thing is, though, in your defense now, I'll come to your side, is the Chip Kelly factor. Like,
yeah.
I feel that this team has the widest range of win total possibility in the entire league.
I agree.
I could see it going all – I could see Chip Kelly, like, him knowing completely what he was doing and it all going right, and they win the division with, like, a good record. I could see it completely imploding.
If it goes 4-12, if this is this,
like I could see this team going anywhere, honestly, from like 4-12 to 12-4. There is no other team in the league that I can say that.
Most teams,
like the idea that a team's win range could be like wider than four is pretty crazy. I just think that I wouldn't be surprised. Like again, it's like Carolina, but a little different in that I have no unearthly idea what the record's going to be. So I'm just going to kind of pick something in the middle.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go 9 wins with you, but I think that's third place and no playoffs. I believe they lose a critic. They and the Giants will be 9-6 going into week 17 in Giants Stadium. Giants win. They get the division. Eagles go home.
I have always held to the notion that it is.
And by the way, Sam Bradford, chief checkdown, still stinks. the old adage, if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have any.
Yeah.
What if you have four quarterbacks? I mean,
if he stays healthy, I think you know, he's going to have a good year.
What did my buddy Brian Landershina post on my wall? You commented, remember? It's like the Eagles quarterback battery is like peaked in college Rob Lowe. they have Sam Bradford, Mark Sanchez,
Barkley,
and Tim Tebow. Those guys got a lot of tail behind the dorm. But
I've been slow to concede. But I do now concede. I don't think Barkley is going to amount to much at the pro level. I was still holding out hope for him even a year ago. I'll tell you this though, and again, I think it's grossly irresponsible to offer a psychological diagnosis long distance apropos of nothing. Having said that, there's no question that Chip Kelly is clearly a megalomaniac. There's no question about that.
Yeah, he got all that power, and then he just started just, like, making, like...
The Howie Roseman thing?
There's never been an offseason where there was this much change for a
team.
For
the sake of change,
Well, I don't know if it was for... I mean, I assume he thinks the moves he was making were better. I mean, whether you do is a different story for a different day, but here's the thing. I've never seen so many moves for a team that was, like, pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, they, like... It wasn't like...
And the best case scenario is that they're still pretty good.
Yeah, like a 10-6 team usually tries to make that one big move to take it to the next level.
Right.
He just blew the whole damn thing up and brought in all new people. So I just... It scares me. And the fact that a lot of things you said scare me. And the fact that I think the Giants are just going to be better is why I picked the NFC East the way I did.
Two last notes on them. One is I will forever bear a grudge against Chip Kelly for forever... exposing our NFC East preview from this past year. You mentioned about how we taped in February and I dribbled them out. Unfortunately, with everything he did in early March, almost everything we said about the Eagles was obsolete. So thanks for nothing, Chip Kelly, you a-hole. Second of all, I think he's a fascinating case of, I like to use the thing of the sliding doors theory of life here, about dating back to that movie. You know, if somebody's in a slightly different scenario, how much different everything would be. Considering that he was choosing between the Browns at the time, the Joe Banner-led Browns and the Eagles.
The who?
The Browns.
Yes.
What is a Chip Kelly thing? Does he make it through seven games that first season in Cleveland? You know what I mean? It's just...
It'd be a lot more entertaining than the manure product they have now.
Well, yeah. Yeah, it would be. But him and his showboating thing of, I'm going to give players their individual shakes and whatever. I don't like that either.
You don't like math and science because you're a good Republican boy.
I just think he's a show-off. I don't like show-offs like that. But so we got them out of the way.
He's a show-off because he's looking out for people.
Well, you know, you can do that without tipping off the media to it so ostentatiously.
Yeah, okay, I'll give you that point. Okay.
Just so that the beat writers can have something to tweet about. Their stupid pictures of your individualized milkshakes. What a goof.
Would you take an individualized milkshake from Chip Kelly?
Unfortunately, at this point, it would have to be gluten free.
Yes, okay, yeah. So yeah. And you know what? He would make sure it was for you.
You know what? Hey, I could count on him for that. I could certainly count on him for that. Up next, coincidentally, the team that Nick Foles ended up going to, the St. Louis Rams, could be the L.A. Rams in another year once again. But for the time being. Again, and it's just
a team that you have always tried to bang the drum for in recent years.
Yeah, but I'm kind of done with that. Even though, again, I think that, and I've been on record as saying this in recent months here. I think slowly, we're going to see the league start bending back towards the importance of having a run game. I don't know if it was Seattle being the canary in the coal mine or whatever, but part of it is. Some of the guys coming out and going to be coming out in the next couple of years in the draft. Nick Chubb, Todd Gurley, who did come out this year and is playing there. I think Ezekiel Elliott is somebody we can put in that category as well as being a bell cow. But Todd Gurley is one of the guys who can be a real difference maker at running back in the league. Notwithstanding that, it's the same old situation here. Questionable wide
receivers. Thank you, Vince Neil.
Yeah, they've been on my mind for a number of reasons here recently that we won't get into. But wide receiver situation, always questionable.
You've been doing heroin?
Some things might have driven me to that in recent days.
Whoa, good.
By the way, shout out to our friend Anthony Petrone.
Whoa, yeah. Start my heart.
Nick Foles, Sam Bradford, it's the classic kind of six of one, half dozen of another. Why do you even bother? Defensively, they do keep getting better and better with the way that they've upgraded
that front
year after
seven,
year.
You know, teams that make the if I want to pick a team to make the playoffs,
yeah.
I do kind of want them to be great at something.
Yeah.
The Rams have a great front four.
If the Giants had their front four, they might be 14-2.
Yeah, I mean, they have a great front four. The
yeah.
problem is I don't know if there's four other players on the team I really like.
What about Laurinaitis inside? He's always been a good playmaker.
Never heard of him. But all right, I want to talk about the thing you said with Gurley.
Yeah.
I'm not sold that the days of the bell cow are back. I realize that Marshawn Lynch.
They will be. I think we're a year or two away from that.
I'm not sure that they will be,
okay.
to be honest with you.
Okay.
I'm not sure about that.
Okay.
Here's the problem with Gurley. One, he's coming off a major injury. Two, he's running behind a terrible offensive line. The Rams' offensive line stinks. Yeah, Nick Foles is going from Chip Kelly and then Andy Reid before that to the very unimaginative offense of Jeff Fisher and Brian Schottenheimer.
Right.
And, oh, by the way, he has no receivers to throw to.
Yeah.
It's a bad combination.
Yeah,
the Rams are a team that I have not been high on in recent years. I've always kind of been – it's kind of like the same argument we had about Minnesota earlier in the podcast, that I just think their ceiling is not nearly as high as you did. This year, ironically enough, I actually do see them improving, mainly because I see two of the teams in the division declining greatly. We've already talked about it. You and I disagree immensely on Arizona. I have Arizona winning four less games than they did last year. So I've got St. Louis 8-8.
8-8.
Right where Vegas has them.
6-10 last year. Me too. I'm right there.
They just feel like I think that they have a better chance of making the playoffs than the Vikings.
Ooh, I don't agree with that.
I know you don't. But I'm offensive line? I am higher
Bridgewater
on
Bridgewater v. Foles, I don't agree with that at all.
I think that's a pretty even battle. I think that
the receiving core.
What are the Vikings great at? Like I said, the Rams have one thing they're great at. Nick Foles can be okay if you give him some weapons, but God, is their offensive line awful.
I think this is going to be the year for Kenny Britt. By the way, and as much as I don't know, I just want to punch that knob.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll call that impression of the guy you just want to punch.
Pretty much. And by the way, as much as I find I told you so stuff to be completely obnoxious, by the way, let me get this in here. At least you're admitting that.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. But having said that, what has two thumbs and called Tavon Austin a bust the year he was drafted? This guy. You don't take a gadget player in the top 10, Kyle Ross, ever.
That was not a good pick, was it?
That was horrible.
It was not a good pick.
By the way, too, to show that I'm not a homer, I said the same thing about Ted Ginn Jr. You never take a gadget player in the top 10.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Never. But you know, Gurley, when healthy, I think is going to be one of the guys, you know, bringing sexy back vis-a-vis the running back position here in the league. But we're a year or two or three, I think, from that really attaining critical
mass. Jeff
Fisher,
by the way, king of 7-9 and 8-8 seasons.
He is.
He, like, is revered as he is in the coaching fraternity.
But
if it wasn't for, like, two or three overachieving seasons, his record would be not very good. Like, he had, like, the one year he went to the Super Bowl, they came out of nowhere. It was, like, I think, like, the first or second year they were in Tennessee?
Yeah.
Then they were good the year after, but got upset by a better Baltimore team who won the Super Bowl. That was their best team. That was Fisher's best team, I thought, actually. And then
could have been.
He had that one year. What was this, like 07 or 08, when like Kerry Collins like inexplicably
right.
was awesome.
Yep.
For them, but then they were one and done in the playoffs that year. If it wasn't for like those 3 years, his record would not be very impressive. I'd just like to point that out. He's gotten this team to respectability.
Right.
I wonder if it may take someone else to get him over the hump.
I agree with that completely.
Whoa.
I really do. Yeah, I think that that's he's not necessarily the guy to get the job done. I will tell you this here, a segue here to an organization which is very, very stupid because the guy they had to get to get the job done is somebody that they decided to go away from, Jim Harbaugh. They now have, as much as I've name-checked tonight, Chris Palmer as an example for coaches that are one and done, this Jim Tomsula fella seems like a nice guy. He is spoken highly of as a teacher, the same way that Chris Palmer was. But let me tell you something.
I spoke highly of my poli-sci 270 professor, too. I wouldn't want him coaching my football team.
Yeah, and I ain't exactly friggin' Nostradamus to say this. Jim Tomsula is Chris Palmer 2K15. Because he will flame out so horribly in this job for many circumstances, by the way, that are way beyond his control, i.e. his entire defense retiring and or getting arrested. They're not nearly – they went from arguably the best defense in the league, you know, 3 years ago to a complete and utter shell right now. Absolutely pathetic, absolutely horrible. 5-11. They were 8-8 last year. They're going to be a flame out.
Wow. They're going to go from 12 to 5 wins in 2 years.
Yeah.
Morris says.
And Jed York is going to deserve every bit of it because you know something? You know, is.
This was one of the worst. This was one of the worst organizations in the sport before Harbaugh arrived. I'd like to point that out. They were awful for about, like, what? Like 7-8 years?
Yeah.
I mean, Mike Nolan.
Right.
I mean, we're not even going to. Do I even mention Mike Singletary? Maybe the worst NFL head coach ever.
I remember the joke that I made when they hired Mike Nolan. That if you remember, one of the things that got talked up was what was his dad's name? Dick Nolan, I think, was an old 49er coach from like the 60s who was real popular. I said, man, I would have combed the landscape to see if Bill Walsh had any illegitimate kids out there before I went and hired this guy. You know,
that was a good
Thank you. Thank you. But it's let me tell you something. Is Jim Harbaugh a complete sociopath? I think that's a reasonable conclusion.
Aren't all good coaches sociopaths?
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. What great football coach do you also hear is a great family man these days?
Exactly.
I'm sure there's some out there, but
that
whatever.
Doesn't disqualify him from the job. He is, I mean, listen, if and I guess I'd have to comb back to, I mean, they had some success back in, I think it was, the 50s and whatever, but I mean.
That has no relevancy to today.
Well, what I'm saying is, because I don't want to make a blanket statement, is Bill Walsh is clearly the best coach in the history of the franchise.
Yes.
But I think I'm pretty safe in saying.
Well, their run through the 80s and 90s is unbelievable.
But if not for Bill Walsh, and maybe, listen, Seifert did win two Super Bowls, so yeah, I guess you got to put him in there. But you take them out of the mix, and Harbaugh is the best coach in franchise history, and they just ran him out of there.
I mean, you talk about coaching downgrades.
Yeah,
this is one of the biggest in recent memory, going from Jim Harbaugh to Jim Tomsula.
And their best hope right now, and what's funny is you get online and you see their meathead fans who still are acting like, hey, we're still the 49ers, whatever. Their best hope is that they do maybe even worse than what we're saying, hit rock bottom quickly and retool. That's the best case scenario, is you can be the 49ers again 5 years from now when they get their heads out of their ass and hire a real head coach again and retool. Because right now they're in trouble. Trent Baalke, hey, congratulations, pal. You wanted rid of your sociopath? You did. How do you like life now? Well, right now you could probably still be deluded because you haven't started playing games yet. But, Kyle, it going to get ugly, my man.
So, you are picking some real monster to your aggression. Usually I'm against that, as you know.
But usually the circumstances aren't like this. This is an extreme circumstance.
Hold on. Yes, it is. I'm about to agree with you,
okay.
Richard B. Morris. Okay?
Okay.
The plexiglass principle, look, they went from 12 to 8 wins, like I was kind of alluding to before you jumped in there. Usually that signals kind of an uptick that they're going to bounce back. It ain't happening here. I'm more pessimistic about this team. I think this is going to be the worst two-year regression we've seen since the end of the Jake Delhomme Carolina Panthers. I've got them at 4 wins, worst team in the NFC. I keep looking at it, and I don't know how in God's name you can make a case for this team to be good. They have no talent left. Like, this is awful. And the coaching downgrade, I mean, this is a really, like, this defense, I have never seen a defense get this badly this quickly.
Right.
Ever, I don't think.
Right.
It's over. You're right. And what's funny is they actually don't need to maybe take a quarterback. I would still try to build around Colin Kaepernick. He's a unique talent. But.
Going to be a new system. And
yeah, they need to build around. It's funny that all of their wins last year were close, too. So, like, they should have actually been worse last year. Their wins, 5-5, 3 in overtime, 6-4-3. So, they had, after a week 6 2-touchdown win at St. Louis, which put them at 4-2, after that, they did not win a game by more than 6 points.
Well, and when you're...
And they quit on the coach, too, which should be pointed out.
They did. When your case for optimism defensively is, maybe Navarro Bowman could be 70% of what he used to be, that kind of sums it all up, doesn't it?
It's over. This is the worst team in the NFC.
We agree
on
that.
Only Cleveland will be worse.
We agree on that. And the only reason we needed to take the time on them that we did was to sufficiently beat the crap out of them, because they deserve it for tearing this all down. So up next,
worst off season in recent NFL history, San Francisco.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think there's an excellent case to be made for that. I go back to the funny thing is, across the bay, you could make a case for the Raiders after the year they made the Super Bowl and immediately plummeted. But I mean,
that was awful.
Yeah, kind of the same thing. Across the bay, yeah.
But you know what was interesting, though, is that what killed that team was the coaching change, and they got by for a year with Callahan.
Right.
There. They will not, this team is not getting by with Tom Sula.
Not at all. No question about it. All right, up next here, we have the Seattle Seahawks. A
favorite team of this podcast in recent years.
Yes.
For good reason.
12-4 last year. I have them at 11-5. And I will say, you know, in deference, I think probably the finest wild card team maybe in NFL history. But a wild card team.
That's insane.
Nonetheless, because they share a division with the Arizona Cardinals.
That's insane.
I think this team clearly enters. I know it's very tough to make the Super Bowl 3 years in a row, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But they clearly enter to me as the number one team in the league for the third year in a row.
Even ahead of Green Bay?
Yes. Yes, going into the season, yes. They have one question mark, is it along the offensive line, but I just think they're strong enough everywhere else that it doesn't matter.
Are you figuring by midseason that amazing safety tandem of Thomas and Cameron is going to be back in there, or Chancellor is going to be back in there and getting it done?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that there's no reason not to expect 12 wins again.
Okay.
Jimmy Graham is just the kind of weapon in the passing game they haven't had. You know, do they get something out of Paul Richardson finally? That's another guy they got to have bounce back.
I've been wondering about that guy for a while. That guy could be a guy that they envisioned when they had.
It's just the only thing working
Percy
against
Harvin
Seattle.
Or Jet
the only
sweeps
thing working
like.
Against Seattle is, you know, and we'll get to this momentarily, is the Super Bowl loser's curse. You would have to go back to the Buffalo Bills of the 90s to find the last time a team that lost the Super Bowl made it back.
Here's the thing.
If they get home field advantage, it's going to be tough. And I'm picking them to get home field advantage again in the NFC.
Well, and that's the main reason I picked Arizona to win the division, because I had to retrofit that. To pick them to go to the Super Bowl, I had to pick them to win the division. But here's the thing.
Stop that retrofitting.
Let me ask you about this, though.
No.
Because, again, and this is going to – yeah, do you take any comfort from the notion that you said, yeah, nobody's done it since Buffalo? When was it almost done? I picked it to be done a couple of years ago. I picked San Francisco in 2013 to go to the Super Bowl, and they were one pass in Seattle at the end away from getting there. So do you take any credence from that?
I think they're going to be very – don't get me wrong. Like I said, 12-4 home field advantage. They're going to be very close.
Yeah.
But I'm going to
How about this?
Change. I love saying, look, they have been very kind to me in this program. I was the guy, like, I thought they have been the, I could make a case that at the, well, certainly 2 years ago, no one's going to dispute it. But I thought they were the best team in the league, arguably, at the end of the year, each of the last 3 years.
Okay.
No one thought they were a worse team than Atlanta when they lost to Atlanta in that playoff game on a last second field goal.
Fluco Grande.
Yes. And then last year, I mean, I'm sorry, they should have won the Super Bowl. They should have given the ball to Marshawn Lynch, and they should have won the damn Super Bowl. They should be a two-time defending Super Bowl champion.
Spoiler alert, Seattle should get another crack at Atlanta this year in the playoffs. We'll get to that at the end. But I want to ask you this.
Well, I think all the emotions are gone after that.
As you may have heard, a couple of big highs and a couple of big lows for them since that game. Rumor has it anyways. Yes. But Max Unger getting traded for Jimmy Graham. You got to give up something to get something. That's an offensive line I think we would agree. It's been good, not great the last couple of years. So,
the offensive line, you make a great point. The offensive line was kind of a weak spot anyway, and it got weaker.
Yeah.
So
Marshawn Lynch being a guy who has been the league leader the last couple of years in
they're
gonna yards
need
after
him.
Contact.
Yeah, they're going to need him to continue doing a drop-off.
When does he fall off the cliff?
They better hope it's not this year because then that's trouble. But I just think, look, I don't have a strong regard for this division. You know, you and I differ greatly on Arizona.
Okay.
I think St. Louis's ceiling remains fairly low, and we both agree that San Francisco is going to fall off a cliff.
Yep.
So I think Seattle kind of dominates this division. I think they're going to be awesome after their bye. Their second half schedule is full of home games that they're going to dominate, and the road games aren't too tough.
Yep.
So I see 12-4.
All right.
Their win total is, by the way, the 49ers, I didn't mention it. Their win total, this is one of the rare times I'm with the herd.
Uh-huh.
They've dropped, opened at 8.5. It's down to 6.5, and I'm still going under.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah. The herd is right.
Yeah. There is a lot. If the Seahawks, or pardon me, the Niners finish with less than 6 wins, Vegas takes a bath on that one. The Seahawks have the highest win total in the league, currently 11.5 games. I'm going to actually say over, which does seem risky. I concede that to
you. Yeah, but you know
Richard
what?
Richard C. Morris.
I'm going to have a bell here for when you finally get to the right middle initial that I will ring. Okay. 11.5 Here's the thing, though.
That's a high number. Betting over is not the
lines. Yeah, but you know what, though? I think you're with the herd on that. I'm saying just under, albeit at 11 wins, there's no way I would bet that. But you're probably way more people agree with you than me. Joe Public is more likely to agree over.
I don't know. I don't think it's overwhelming.
It's the Seahawks, man. Yeah. It's the Seahawks. Joe Public's with you.
I mean, Joe Public that lives in Seattle is. Well, I mean, you ripped me 20 minutes ago for always going against the Public, and now, Jesus, you sound like my wife.
I'll rip you for whatever.
Sound like my wife.
I'm being very.
Well, I don't know popular music anymore because of you. I don't know any of these bands that these other people were talking about.
I'm being very Trump-like. I'm opportunistically ripping you for whatever I can.
Well, first of all, I think you're terrible.
By the way, as I glance over, you probably have the hair to be able to pull off the comb if you wanted.
I got a lot of lettuce, man.
You probably could. You could make that lettuce fly for you, no question.
Oh my God, Seattle has been one of my favorite teams in recent years, mm-hmm. And it's funny. I don't have a because I look. Everyone agrees they'll be good. We'll talk about them when we talk about the playoffs. But now it's time to talk about one of my new favorite teams in the league.
Well, and to make the segue, the team that came into the league with them in 1976, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yes. They asked me if I like the Bicentennial. I told them about as much as I like Arsenio. Or I think I got that. I'm sorry, Ice Cube, I got that mixed up. But they asked me if I like Arsenio. I told them about as much as the Bicentennial, is what he said.
Okay.
Did you see Straight Outta Compton?
Still haven't seen it yet.
That's a big mistake by you. Good movie.
Gotta love the way they whitewashed Dr. Dre beating the crap
here's a phrase you've heard before.
What?
The winners always write history, don't they? Yes, yes,
yeah, yeah.
Yes, the Monday Night Wars and Straight Out of Compton.
Yeah.
Enjoyable, yet, historically favorable.
Yeah, very, very interesting about how Apple, who entered into the business relationship with them, has had to answer for Dr. Dre's beats on women.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Hashtag see what I did.
Well, okay, and on that note, I guess we're going to Jameis Winston now, aren't we?
Whoa!
Oh boy, okay, yes.
Oh,
hey, but
Jameis, what was harder to crack open, that girl's legs or the crab meat?
Well, to be honest, I think the crab legs has been substantiated. That's been substantiated. The other one, let's be a little safe. There's countersuits around. We don't know what happened there. We don't know what happened there. But I'll tell you something. So. You know, and I talked about this. This is one thing I am being rather unequivocal on, and I think you should be proud of me for this.
Okay.
I have not wavered since February. This is going to be the most improved team in football this year, bar none.
I got them at 6 wins plus. Yeah.
Oh,
two,
I,
two
yeah,
and 14.
Yeah.
I got them
Vegas.
At eight,
Vegas
eight,
has them
eight.
At 6, and this is my favorite over.
Oh,
I think
yeah.
their minimum is 6. I think their high watermark is 9, and I'm going to pick them at 9. And
okay.
I'm going to pick them to make the playoffs.
Ooh, I almost did, then I backed off.
This is not an endorsement long-term of Winston.
Okay.
He is no matter what you think of the guy, he's a massive upgrade over Josh McCown.
Right.
Massive, massive upgrade.
Right.
He comes into a situation that's pretty good. Do we see the old Doug Martin of a couple of years ago? I don't know. The offensive line, a little scary, but I think could be better with some draft. They addressed it in the draft.
Right.
He's got some great receivers to throw to, Mike Evans and Vincent Jackson.
Yep.
So this offense is going to be a lot better. The defense has some very talented players, namely Levante David and Gerald McCoy.
Yeah.
But this is a team that the numbers smile on in a way that is very reminiscent of Houston last year, maybe even more so. Tampa Bay did not win a home game last year.
Right. That won't happen again.
They were 1-8 in games decided by 7 points or less last year.
Right.
I think they didn't win a division game. Like everything to me says much better.
Mm-hmm.
And when everything points that much, you know what? It came down to the fact that I just like what they're doing more than New Orleans. And
right.
they're a team that will suffer the plexiglass principle next year, Tampa Bay, I think. Like, they're not a team that I'm buying is this great long-term thing. I still have questions if Lovie Smith's defense can still hack it in 2015. But they've got a last-place schedule and a lot of room to improve. Luck was all against them last year. 9-7 for Tampa Bay, second place, wild card.
In terms of sleepers, too, for a number 3 option out there in the passing game, pretty good guy with some upside, Austin Seferian Jenkins, a tight end.
Well,
could break out.
Yeah. he's another tall guy they have. I mean, if they, if they can get, that's three huge
red
options.
Zone. Yeah,
Vincent Jackson, Evans, and Jenkins. Jenkins has a little problem holding on to the football, though.
That's true.
They did go out and get back, what's his name, the tight end that they sent to New England momentarily, Tim Wright.
Yeah, right.
He's back. So I think that, I think this offense is going to put points on the board. And I thought Winston looked pretty good Monday night against Cincinnati. By Monday night, I mean week two of the preseason, depending on when you listen to this. So.
Yeah, your results may vary.
Yes. So I thought he looked good, and I think he's going to play well his rookie year. I it's such a lazy comparison to go RG3 here, but it works in the sense that Washington's the last team we haven't talked about.
Yeah.
Yes, but I think Winston's the kind of guy who can come in and have a big rookie year, but then kind of hit a wall.
Well,
after
the
that,
no, and
he was undone by support when his number. People look at his numbers regressing his sophomore year at Florida State. His receivers did him no favors. If you watch that Oregon game, and I watched it on New Year's Day, there was no difference between him and Mariota really, except the fact that Mariota's receivers were catching the ball and doing something with
it. Yeah, true.
Well, all Florida State's receivers did was drop it.
Well, in Washington, 4-12 last year. I got him for 6-10 this year. Let's start with that point of comparison, RG3. And
so like
with Winston, because, yes, I do, because, and I'll tell you why, again, Winston, look, I think for a guy who tweeted out crab meat pictures on draft night.
That was bad.
Knucklehead.
That was bad, but God, you know what? Maybe this guy just loves crab meat.
Knucklehead.
Maybe he just loves crab meat and he just can't be.
Well, here's the thing. If he's going to be undone by anything, he's going to be undone by that. Versus RG3, model citizen. Good guy from everything we can tell, whatever. But I was never...
Egomaniac, though.
A lot of belief in himself. I don't know. I mean, it's a fine line. Here's the thing, though. I was never... going into his rookie year, I kind of didn't know what to expect. Because, you know, Baylor, kind of a gimmicky offense, but still...
Most Big 12 quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And that is an offense where they all run the spread.
Yep.
And it's like real... The throws are real easy because everyone goes like 4 or 5 wide, and it's just like dink and dunk passes where you throw to the first guy who's open in space.
Right.
All those quarterbacks have pretty much not done well in the pros.
Well, here's the thing, though. His offensive coordinator's first year, Kyle Shanahan.
Did a great job.
Who, it's on the record, cares only about positioning himself for his next job. So.
Is that on the, was, that's on the record, or is that a Rick Morris take?
Well, I consider it on the record anyways. But here's the deal. He took shortcuts with RG3 the first year, and it had consequences health-wise in terms of blowing out his knee, but that was at the height of the whole, you know, gimmick offense here in the NFL. And we're going to run, pistol offense. We're going to do this kind of stuff here. And what I said after year one proved to be completely vindicated. I said, let's see the guy do it in a standard offense, because sooner or later, you have to do that. Jameis Winston, from what he ran at Florida State.
That was a very pro-ready offense.
Whatever else I may say about him personally, I have no such qualms. Jameis Winston, on paper, is what you want as an NFL quarterback. He can run an NFL offense.
I completely agree with him being chosen over Mariota.
I
agree with the Mariota pick
too.
At number two.
I don't think Mariota has the ceiling to go to. I think that was like force a need. Let me put it to you this way. He's better than Blake Bortles, but it's Bortles-esque taking him at 2 like Bortles was taken at 3. It's Bortles.
I can't agree with that.
No, but he's a better. No,
my concern with Mariota is he a match for a Ken Whisenhunt offense?
And he may not be. And
no, he may not.
You hope that Ken Whisenhunt will retrofit to his strengths. I think to an extent, Jay Gruden in Washington is trying to walk the fine line.
He doesn't want RG3 anymore.
Well,
he wants to rid himself of this RG3.
Yeah, but look, he also doesn't want to go 3-13 and possibly get run out of town. He's a guy who almost didn't make it the year two, if you believe some of the rumors. Plus, this new GM that they have, who's very sterling, may get to hire his own guy. So I think he is making an honest effort this year to get as much out of Robert Griffin as he can. RG3, I think, the legacy of the knee injury is that he'll never be that explosive guy that he was in 2012 ever again. He has enough to do that, but again, does he have enough pocket skills? And that's why I have them at 6-10. They're an improving team. When you talk about defenses being volatile up and down,
Washington, their defense is going to be better this year.
Yes, they have a chance to be an under-the-radar, decent defense this year, and I have bagged on their defense for years.
Oh, it's been awful.
So they have a chance for that to be the case. But as I look at this here, again, offensively, that will kind of hold them back. Nice depth at running back, though. That will carry them to a decent degree.
They have kind of good receivers, too.
Yeah, DeSean Jackson still doesn't get the credit that he deserves. Pierre Garçon, I say this as a disgruntled fantasy owner last year, way more erratic than you'd like to see out of him. They're going to need him to be a little bit better this year and a little bit more consistent. But RG3 is going to hold him back. But quietly around him, the rest of the team may be kind of advancing in a way that sets them up for the future.
Is it his last year in Washington?
Yes, RG3. I do believe so. Yes. I do believe so.
You don't think Kirk Cousins is the answer, do you?
No.
They need to just get rid of both of them and start fresh.
At one time... And you're going to look at me cross-eyed, but I mean...
I don't know how to have cross eyes.
Well, when I say this, that I was open to the possibility... I was open to the possibility at various points in time that Kirk Cousins, Brian Hoyer, and Drew Stanton may amount to something. What I have since discovered is there's a Sparty cloning machine out there because all three of them are the same guy.
Yeah, Kirk Cousins, he had that game last year where he threw for 427 yards in a losing effort at Philly. The next week, they were absolutely humiliated home by the New York Giants 45-14.
I can be as bad as most people at some of this stuff, even Browns fans. After he lit up the Browns late in 2013, I wanted the Browns to give up a second-round pick to get him.
I've just never bought. Kirk Cousins, to me, is a very good backup quarterback.
Yeah.
But he's not a starter. Yeah, well, RG3... just needs to go somewhere else too. It's just one of those things that will be better for both.
Colt McCoy gives you some good.
Washington
pop off the bench
is, and the thing is, Washington will probably still be bad enough this year that they're gonna have a chance to get a quarterback in the draft again. It's funny now, people rip on them for the trade for RG3, and especially if they move on, they'll get ripped on.
Everybody
even more.
Ripped the Browns for years for not doing it, and I said at the time,
oh, that would have been
that's way too high of a price.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. St. Louis, keep in mind, has done nothing with those extra picks. Washington at least got a draft.
Except troll the Redskins by making them honorary captains when they played them.
Yeah, well, big deal. Good. You can pat yourself on the back, Jeff Fisher. I mean, the bottom line is the Rams haven't gone. The Redskins at least got to the playoffs that one year.
And this is the whole
thing. Which is more than the Rams say. But bottom line is I'm with you. 5 or 6 wins. Vegas has them at
right.
6. It's 5 or 6.
And
I would not bet the over here.
I said this at the time. And the Browns had a lot more holes in 2012 than they do now. Although, as we've established, quarterback and wide receiver are still gaping holes. But I said at the time, because Andrew Luck was the first pick overall.
He was.
For an Andrew Luck, you give up that haul. For an RG3,
no, you're right.
When you have a lot of holes, you don't give up that
no.
much.
No, you don't. You trading up
bad
like
move.
That. No one, I mean, it's funny. I'm kind of glad they did it because I feel that no one will ever do that trade again.
Is that this generation's Herschel Walker trade?
No, because St. Louis is not Dallas.
Okay.
I mean, in a sense that it appears to have set the Redskins back, I see what you're saying. It's just one of those trades that neither team won, I don't think.
Yeah,
as of yet.
They got some decent players.
The Redskins aren't going to win.
Wasn't Aaron Donald one of those players, though?
Yeah, but what have the Rams done? What have the Rams done?
Just getting Aaron Donald makes them the winner hands down. I don't think you can say.
I think they're a slight winner, but it's not like the Cowboys who won 3 Super Bowls and turned one of those picks in Emmitt Smith.
Okay.
That was unprecedented.
That may be
by the
unrealistic.
Way, number of wins last year by more than 3 points by Washington. How many games did they win by more than a field goal last year?
They won out of 4 games. I'm going to say 1.
Yeah. 41-10 over Jacksonville in week 2.
Wow.
Their other 3 wins were by 2 over Tennessee. They stunned Dallas in that Monday nighter when Romo hurt his back. That was a great game. Remember when Romo walked back?
Mm-hmm.
My God, King, they're playing Tony Romo's music. And they beat Philly late in the year by 3. That was a Saturday game, too. That was a weird game. I think I was on Washington that game.
I think you were.
On the show, and I think you were very upset at me.
Yeah, and you were right. By the way, and before we move on to the playoffs, I just want to make a point about Washington that illustrates the knee-jerk nature.
There's
of...
one other thing they need to change besides quarterback.
What?
The nickname.
Oh, Redskins is fine. I mean, we've had it all these years. I see nothing wrong with it.
Okay. When Kyle Ross is America, goes in and kills all the Christians, and then I want to name a football team the Christian Killers. You get back to me, okay?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, the left wing is American ISIS, so there you go.
Oh, but, Jesus. Here's
the thing. The reactionary knee-jerk nature of the NFL and of judging these things, because you're saying now, oh, it's this consensus that they were rooked by St. Louis. Well, here's the thing. I think part of what I'm going to say is shaped by, again, there is a lot of opprobrium, rightfully so, that is heaped on my Cleveland Browns. But the fact that Washington was deemed to have punked the Browns on that the Browns were only willing to go so far on this, no
further.
Didn't
the Browns still trade up for Trent Richardson in the same draft?
No, they did.
So they're stupid, too.
They are. But Washington gained... For the longest time, it was thought that they won the trade, Kyle, for a good one, probably 2 years. St. Louis got these guys, but you can't put a price tag on franchise quarterbacks.
After the first year, you would have judged Washington as the winner of that trade.
Right. And
because
now,
they won the division.
And now
Washington,
it's totally the other way around.
I wouldn't say totally, but it's not in their favor. Because St. Louis has not done anything.
But I'm pointing out we've come a long way. Because the consensus initially was
that
they
rooked
St. Louis.
Would Washington still be a crappy team? I don't know. It's tough to say because you don't
know
Washington with those picks.
Oh, they would have blown them because, you know, again.
With Dan Snyder running the show, they're just a poorly run organization anyway. So I have no faith that they would be any...
Although, again,
They did lose
checks.
A lot of picks, though, and it caused a lot of holes.
And if all he's going to be doing is writing checks, then the Redskins fans are going to be in a much better position. No
yeah, I think they're a team in 2 years, you know, when they get a new quarterback, can make a jump in this division.
I really,
it would be their turn because these teams all take turns winning the division.
That's absolutely true. And looking at the overall picture, the playoffs after this season, we've run through the entire NFC looking at the roster of teams there. This is what I have as far as my picks for the wild card round. I have number 5 Seattle going on the road and getting revenge over number 4 Atlanta for the way that 2012 season ended. Seattle will finish them off this time. And I have, in looking at this year, number 6 Minnesota. They will go into the link at Philadelphia and beat the number 3 seed Eagles. The Vikings advance.
You have the Cardinals and Vikings in your divisional playoff.
I do indeed. Going a step further, and they will meet. So either the Cardinals or Vikings, Kyle Ross, will be in the NFC Championship.
My head hurts.
The number 1 Arizona Cardinals will defeat the number 6 Minnesota Vikings. Number 2 Green Bay over number 5 Seattle in what will be a conference semifinal. In the conference championship Sunday, it will be a repeat of the 2008 season when everybody thought that Philadelphia was going to go to Arizona and just take care of business on the road. Nope, number 1 Arizona over number 2 Green Bay, and in the Super Bowl, San Diego Chargers over the Arizona Cardinals. That is how Super Bowl 50 goes down in the Bay next February. Kyle Ross, clip and save, you heard it here first.
I don't think I'm going to hear it again, I'll tell you that much.
The look on your face is just outstanding.
All
right,
my NFC playoffs are as follows. Wild card round. Dallas goes to Atlanta and wins 5-4.
Okay.
3-6 matchup. Green Bay hammers Tampa Bay.
Okay.
Divisional round. Green Bay goes on the road to the Giants. They win.
Okay.
Seattle takes care of business at home over number 5 Dallas. So I have a rematch of Seattle and Green Bay in the NFC Championship game in Seattle, and Green Bay pulls the upset.
Okay.
In Seattle.
All right.
I think they will be. This is a team with its eye on the playoffs. They will have a disappointing regular season and be a great value in the playoffs. And then in the Super Bowl, Aaron Rodgers versus Andrew Luck, the two best quarterbacks in the game.
Sexy matchup.
Give me Aaron Rodgers to win his second Super Bowl. Green Bay is going to win. I called Green Bay a few years ago when they won their first Super Bowl.
Okay.
To win before that year. I will do it again. Now, I was wrong when I called for them to repeat, although they were 15-1 in the regular season.
I thought the same thing. Well, you know what the funny thing is? The path you're charting for them this year is like the year they won it as opposed to the year that they lost it the year after when they were that juggernaut in the regular season.
Yes.
So that's very interesting.
Yes.
I will admit to you that if we're going to compare the two, Aaron Rodgers versus Andrew Luck, that's a tiny bit sexier than Phillip Rivers versus Carson Palmer. I'll give you that. There's a little more interest to that, I suppose. But yeah. Even though Carson Palmer, I think he was a Heisman Trophy winner, was he not?
Yes, and, he's another peaked in college Rob Lowe guy. Carson Palmer.
Phillip Rivers will be hoisting his first Lombardi Trophy. Yeah, that's a feel-good
story.
So
it's funny because the last 2 years we've been like very close going into the year.
We've both been Chalky McChalkerson.
This year, you have two teams in the Super Bowl that I do not have in the playoffs.
It's a year of revolution, Kyle.
Who?
The mid-card
is
breaking
the glass
ceiling.
Those are the big ones that we're different on. We're a bit different on Minnesota.
Yeah.
So you're just like, it's funny, what team am I much higher on than you?
You're marginally higher on Kansas City than me.
Yeah, it's
you're two games. You're decently higher on the Giants than me, although 8-8, 10-6.
Yeah.
Beyond that, a funny thing is, even though I'm picking Atlanta to win the division, you're still two games
Yeah,
higher
there's a lot of
them.
Games I'm two, but like it's funny, like those are our three big differences. I'm significantly lower on all of them. I was trying to think of a team that I'm just like way higher on. You. I can't.
There really aren't. I don't think there's
Chicago.
Anybody.
You had six. I had an eight. So I mean, there's. I guess I'm getting you a lot on the twos.
Yeah.
But like the big differences are those are the three. So those are the three to watch, huh?
Yeah. And that's.
Can I tell you something, Joe? And I absolutely love in week one.
What?
I absolutely love San. As bad as I bagged on San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
I absolutely love the way the line's moving.
Okay.
I'm taking them as a home dog against Minnesota on Monday Night Football. San Francisco
Ooh.
Will win one of its four games. In week one,
what's the line as of today?
Oh, it's moving in a direction that I absolutely love. You know the way I operate.
Did San Francisco? And this shows you my ignorance of week one lines. I haven't looked at them yet.
They opened as a slight favorite.
I was going to ask
the line
you if
was
they
released.
Opened as a favorite. Okay.
They are now a dog. I mean that line. It's very similar to the Atlanta New Orleans week one game I cashed on. Last year.
That's as it should be. They should be a home dog to Minnesota. Minnesota's a team
that's
but
no, I can see that. Let's take a look here what the line is. They're not only plus one is where it's at right now.
My goodness, when the Vikings are a team that's five wins better than them this year, that's a bargain. Take the Vikings. Jump on the Vikings
better.
With both feet.
Oh, my God. Road favorite Ricky. Strikes in August.
Strikes in August, folks. Yeah. But that will bring our NFL preview for 2015 full circle. First looking at the AFC, and now in this segment, the NFC. To my good friend Kyle Ross, thank you so much, as always, for this marathon taping here. The stamina of both of us has been extraordinary in going through this, and looking forward to a great 2015 season week by week with you, buddy.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.